All right, you are back with Speaking With, and speaking with me today is Ms. Yvonne Carroll. She's a registered nurse and a lawyer. She's with the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and believe me when I say she is really, really causing this whole subject to make a lot of sense to us. And I believe, Yvonne, you're really helping us make a commitment to being a lot more aware of what is going on with our family members who have sickle cell, whether it be the trait or the disease. And as you were sharing, different levels of the disease.
And well, thank you. I appreciate that. And that's, I really want people to become aware, because most people I talk to said, hey, yeah, you know, they used to talk about sickle cell disease a lot in the 80s, but I haven't heard about it a lot because there's so many other things going on, you know, with AIDS and mm-hmm. heart disease. And there's so many other things going on that people tend to forget. But then when I say, do you know someone who has sickle cell disease? Mostly everyone does. Mm. We treat in the at St. Jude 800 children with sickle cell disease. I mean,
and that's per year?
That's per year. Mm. We treat 800 children with sickle cell disease. We have the estimate is between 60 to 100,000 people in the United States that have sickle cell disease.
What cultures are they in? What cultures are affected?
Well, you know what? I'm glad you asked that, Carl, because it's really interesting. I'll go back into the history of sickle cell disease a little bit, because in the United States, people think sickle cell disease and they think African Americans. And mm-hmm. I have had Caucasians, the white people who have literally won't even take the information because they said, that's not a disease for us. I'm like, yeah, come here, let me talk to you. You know, because what's happening is we're so multicultural now mm-hmm. that you can't say that any disease is just affecting any one group of people. Mm. And because in America, and it was mostly African Americans because of the slave trade, it mm-hmm. happened. Sickle cell disease, they think, came about as a natural body mutation to defend against malaria. Mm-hmm. And malaria happened in warm climates. It still happens, and millions of people a year get malaria in warm climates. So our history, where did black people come from? Africa, warm mm-hmm. climate. Where did white people come from? Europe, cold climate. So at most African Americans, that it mostly affected African Americans, but now what's happening? Our culture is changing. We have Hispanics. Where do most Hispanics come from?
Warm climates. Mm-hmm.
We have Indians. We have Mediterraneans. And now people are so intermingled and have intermarried so much, you really can't say where you come from. So it is a disease that I predict in America within the next 50 years, we will no longer be able to say it is mostly an African-American disease. Right now, in the United States, it is, but it's changing as we speak. And
how has it affected the Europeans who migrated to, say, South Africa, other parts of Africa, and they've been in that warm climate for a while? Are you seeing any changes over the generations? Or
absolutely, because nobody stays. You know, everybody intermingles. And I'll just give you a St. Jude, we are international. We try to help people all over the world. And we had a group come from Ireland here to learn how to set up a sickle cell clinic. And I was shocked. I was like, okay, you have people with sickle cell disease in Ireland? Because that's about as cold as you can get.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah. You know, so many people have migrated, have immigrated, that it's changed the population. In England, London, we had people come from London. The same thing. They were just going to do testing of the people of African descent. But luckily, they did a pilot and tested everybody. Well, what did they find? That they had such a large number among people that they wouldn't have considered of African descent that they had to test everybody. They had to do universal testing. In India, there are more people in one state in India with sickle cell disease than in the entire United States.
Goodness.
In Brazil, We had people come from a state in Brazil, and that state, 1 in 3 people of the entire population had sickle cell traits.
Mm.
So it is, and Danny Thomas, where Danny Thomas was from, his family was from, they were testing for what's called beta thalassemia, which is the same test you do for sickle cell disease,
mm-hmm.
for people who got married, because beta thalassemia, you have a child that could die at birth. And so they were testing for this. What'd they find? They had more people with sickle cell disease than with beta thalassemia.
Goodness.
So it's a worldwide, it's the largest genetic disorder in the world.
So this is something that we really do need to get a handle on. It, as you said, it's not just African-Americans. It's various cultures in America, but it's not just America either. This is something that is gripping the world.
It's something that's gripping the world. And, you know, it makes my heart, it breaks my heart when we had a seminar not too long ago. We invited people from several countries in Africa, and one of the doctors was saying, if you get to die from sickle cell disease, you're lucky. And because sickle cell was so low down on the totem pole for money and for other things mm-hmm. that people were dying from, the children didn't even get to know if they had sickle cell disease. Because, and so we want to change those things. Danny Thomas said, no child should die in the dawn of life, and no child should. I mean, it's, and we're working with, like I said, sickle cell disease. Now we have, and St. Jude has always worked. There are plenty of institutions out here that are doing great work. St. Jude has always worked with them. We have always been, we give away information. We want to give it away.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we're doing now is doing a clinical study with 23 other institutions. We're the lead on it, which means that our doctors thought of the study, wrote it, and contacted the other centers to ask them if they would participate to try to see if we can prevent children from having strokes. And just imagine quality of life. Because
yes, ma'am.
If you have a stroke, you have to go in once a month to get blood. Because the only way to prevent having another stroke is by getting blood that doesn't have the sickle cells in it once a month. And that's an all-day process. So imagine your quality of life. If you're a child trying to go to school, trying to be like other children, and once a month you have to go in to the hospital and get blood.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, imagine if you're working, you have a job, and you have to tell your employer that one day out the month, I can't come to work because I have to take my child. And so it not only impacts the child, but it impacts the parent. It impacts if you have other children, who's going to pick those children up
exactly.
from school while you're in the hospital. All of these things are quality of life issues. So
does it look like we talked about treatment a little earlier, aside from the potential parents trying, you know, I think this would be a difficult task, trying not to come together if their coming together would produce a child who would have sickle cell anemia, sickle cell trait, who could then possibly pass it on to their children. What are some other ways of prevention, if any?
And one of the things, I'm glad you brought that up, Carl, because one of the things that I tell people, our job is to give knowledge to people, to find out if you have trait. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is power. There are ways that if a family finds, if one parent has sickle cell trait and the other parent can have any other type of trait, not just sickle cell trait, but C trait or beta thalassemia trait, that's when I was talking about the different types of sickle cell disease. So, first of all, that's the first step. But there are things that can be done nowadays with family planning and OBGYN that can do selective targeting. But besides from that, we are working on quality of life medication.
Uh-huh.
And one of the medications that has been proven to be fantastic with children with sickle cell disease is one that's called hydroxyurea.
Yes.
And what this is basically, it truly is a cancer drug that didn't work very well for cancer. But what researchers found was that it increased what we call fetal red blood cells, and I call them baby cells. because every baby, no matter who you are, every baby is born with fetal blood. And then when you're born, that switch turns off. And whatever type of blood you're going to make, then you start making it. Well, the fetal blood is a protector. And so what happens is when that switch turns off and you start, if you're going to have sickle cells, then you start making sickle cells. Well, if you can turn that switch back on just a little bit, it's a protector, and the cells don't sickle because those fetal cells love oxygen more than any other type of blood. And so when the oxygen comes in, they say, I'm going to get it. And so the sickle cells, because we don't use all of anything. We don't use all our brain, all our blood, all of anything. So if the fetal blood cells is getting the oxygen, then the sickle cells aren't sickling because they're not releasing and taking that oxygen. So, but with any other drug, you had to start with adults. You always test things on adults first.
Okay.
And so tested on adults, found that it improved pain crisis by 85%. And so the question is, how will it affect children? And infants are always the last people you want to test something on. And what they found out for adults, it did work very well in reducing pain and reducing some other complications. But it didn't undo the damage that had already been done. So the question was, if you started on infants, will they not have the organ damage to begin with? And will it keep them from having the pain crisis throughout their life? And so St. Jude, again, in conjunction with several other hospitals, our doctor was the lead, Dr. Winfred Wong, in a study called Baby Hug Study, and started giving 2-hydroxyurea to infants 9 months old. And it's just now ending, and they will be coming out with the results of that. If this study proves that it is beneficial, this will be the first drug other than penicillin that has been given to infants with sickle cell disease that can help improve their quality of life.
And cause little to no harmful effects.
This drug has been shown, and it has very mild, and we always call risk benefit, very mild side effects. One of the largest side effects has been what we call a decrease in the white blood cells.
Yvonne, you know what? I apologize. We are completely out of time.
Oh, that's all right. I understand.
It has gone so fast. But I really want to thank you so much for having joined me today to speak with me about St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and about sickle cell. And I appreciate you so much for having brought so much light to both topics.
Well, thank you, Carl, so much for having us.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're glad that you were here with us to hear as Yvonne Carroll, registered nurse and attorney with St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, shared that information with us. Do what you can to get more information. Do what you can to try to do everything in your power for those of you who either live with or know someone outside of your household who has this disease to live a better life. You're listening to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Stay tuned.